Welcome to the Working Hands Podcast. I'm your host, Tony of Woodland Iron, joined by Keith of Blackthorn Concepts. And tonight we have a guest. This is Brandon of BCK Knives. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right. Before we get to Brandon, I would like to thank our sponsors. I'd like to thank Sabretooth. If you go to sabretooth.com and use code WH, you can save 10% on all your carving burrs and discs. I use them. I love them. They're fantastic.
And I'll take a moment to thank our sponsor, Maritime Knife Supply, your one-stop shop for makers, your source for abrasive steel, handle material, tools, and more. And you can find him at maritimeknifesupply.ca and .com.
What's going on, Brandon?
Oh, what you know, how you guys doing?
Living the dream.
So, yeah, I'm not being up to too much. Just figured I finished up the Robert Eggerling billet. I don't know if you guys saw that on my Instagram page. Big Bowie, Robert Eggerling's a very old maker. He makes a lot of billets for some high-end companies, Cabot 1911s, things such as that. And I was lucky enough to get a billet from him from Blade Show. So that Bowie came up pretty nice. It's that was probably one of the most intricate knives I've done so far. Handle's got about 14 pieces in it, just in the handle.
Whoa.
And the pattern on it is just, I mean, it's nuts. It's absolutely crazy.
And you got that over at Blade Show?
Yeah. So you guys know Brett Bennett from Maker Camp. He's a knife maker down in New York. I think he just actually moved back to PA. Good friend of mine. He sent me a thing a while back, and he's like, hey, you know, have you seen this thing with Robert? And you know me, I'm kind of new to it, so I was like, who's Robert? Yeah, that's it there. And he showed me, you know, some video and stuff of who he is, and then, you know, I actually was kind of walking past the table down there, and there he was, and I was like, holy crap, man, like, this is the guy you're talking about. Seen him on YouTube, and got the billet, and was able to make that. It was fun. I mean, it was a very hard project. Probably the longest knife I've ever spent time on.
Longest in time?
Yeah. I think it was about 2.5 months, 3 months, me working on it. So it was fun.
Is this a keeper for you, or is this thing up for sale?
No, man, they're all for sale. You know, everything's for sale.
I'm just watching this reel, so I'm kind of distracted. I apologize.
No, that's all right.
It's pretty wild how there's all the different patterns placed in there.
Yeah. He's done some crazy stuff, man, in the last... I'm pretty sure the last one that I saw, the Cabot 1911, went for like $79,000. Like, it was crazy. Like, they're very high-end custom 1911s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. And the guy is he's just very artistic. You know what I mean? It's cool. And you don't know all these people. It's kind of funny. You know, you meet your local guys, you know, your Brett Bennett, your Silas Blacklows, you know, these kind of guys, and they're cool, you know, but then you meet the old timers that's been doing this for some time, and then you really get the history, and the history is when it kind of, you know, then it gets real cool, you know. Matt Stagmer's been doing that with the Bill Moran Museum and stuff, and he's been sharing that stuff with, you know, people and everything else, and that's really, really cool, when you can share that kind of information and stuff. And, you know, it's hard to know all these guys, you know, because there's so many makers out there. And, I mean, you know, there's wood makers, there's, you know, there's 3D printing makers. I mean, there's all these different makers, blacksmiths, bladesmiths, you know, stock removal, forge and bladesmiths. I mean, it's just so much out there. But
billet makers.
You know. Yeah, well, and that's basically what Robert Eggerling is, right? He's just a billet maker. That's all he does. But it's a lot to keep up with, too, you know?
Yeah. I certainly don't know everybody. I get hit with that all the time when people are like, oh, you know, so-and-so, he does all this stuff or she does all this stuff. And I'm like, no, I don't. And they're like, you don't? How do you not know? I'm like, because I don't.
It's hard. I mean,
there's billions of people in the world. I don't know everybody.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, I never knew Patty Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know who she was. I met her down at the Maker Camp at a Hammer Inn. Then at the Maker Camp, her and Tony had came by the blacksmith tent, and the next day she come up to me and she's like, hey, Tony was really impressed with your stuff. And I'm like, who's Tony? I didn't know who Tony was, right? And then Dre and Lucas was like, hey, you know, Tony, swing by the house. And he said, you know, he's really impressed with your Damascus and your work and your leather work. And I'm like, who the hell's Tony? And then I had to go look him up. And I'm like, there's just so many people out there that, you know, that you, like, you don't know.
Was that this Tony?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I messaged him. I was like, hey, I appreciate the, you know, the nice comment. It's really nice of you.
He doesn't say anything flattering about you to me.
Well, it tells me I'm old all the time on, and he sends me all these crazy reels, you know?
Yeah, he's on the list of guys that get the reels. He's got a
like Roy, you
know, he's got a sense of humor.
It's awesome. I'll tell you, I've been on this journey for some time, knife making, and, you know, I want to give out a few names for sure. I probably thought 3 years ago that I kind of hit my mark, and I thought I was hot shit. Then I met Brett Bennett, which you probably know who I'm talking about, Keith, because he's been at the Maker Camp a few times. Guy looks like, James Hetfield from Metallica.
Yeah, there's a few.
Great hair, drives a green truck.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah,
who are you talking about? Yeah. He's quiet, reserved, hangs out the
car. Yeah.
Does the skulls quite a bit.
No.
He also looks
like that, but that is somebody else. Yeah, no, this guy, he's cool. I've talked to him a few times. I don't really know him, but I know who you're talking about.
He's very good. He's taught actually a lot of makers to make things, and mostly knife stuff. But Brett's very, he's methodical in his work, very methodical. He's very patient, and he takes his time. But he's taught me quite a bit about slowing down. And then Matt from Hogtooth Knives is the other guy. And meeting these two guys, you know, what you think that you know, then you learn you don't know nothing. And they really put me in my place on learning and slowing down and doing a lot of better work. But I appreciate them doing that too. You know, it really humbled me enough to kind of kick back and look and, you know, say, all right, well, you need to do a little bit better and slow down. And then has done that a lot. I mean, they really pushed me hard to like get better.
Yeah, I found being able to get to courses and to hammer ins and things like that really do kind of hammer it home that you're where your skill level is or isn't at. You know what I mean?
Well, and you know, if you meet these type of makers that are they've been doing it like okay, so like Matt, right, from Hogtooth. Matt's been doing it since he's 11 years old. He knows so many makers that nobody else knows about. And I mean, some people know these guys and some people don't. I mean, Don Fogg, yeah, everybody kind of knows him. But this guy, Jimmy Fikes, you know, a lot of people don't know who Jimmy is. But Matt kind of trained under him and just the knowledge that some of these guys have. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, hey, you should get these guys on. You know, they'd be great for the podcast or great to talk to. These new makers that are coming up. I'm like, hey, go talk to these guys. They're really good. You know, and they'll help you out. And to be honest with you, I mean, I think some people took a little bit of advice from that, but, you know, I think more people kind of shy away from it. Maybe they're a little scared to talk to these guys, but I'm telling you, if you can find one of those guys that is a lot higher level than you and go talk to them, it will definitely up your game. I mean, it's like talking to Jimmy or talking to me, you know what I mean? Jimmy DiResta. It's like, there's two different realms there. And I think that's where it kind of gets lost a lot of times. People get lost in their head. You know, they're Forged and Fired champion or they're, you know, they're hanging their hat on this or that or whatever. And, you know,
or they had X number of followers.
Yeah, you're good, but you're not that good. Then when you start looking at these other guys' work, you're like, dude, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I tell people this all the time. I thought I was good till I met these two guys and then I knew I wasn't crap. I'm getting there, but I'm nothing like I thought I was. And it's humbling. I mean, it's very humbling. And I do this as a hobby, but I want to be good at it no matter what.
Right.
Yeah, that's something like we've talked about it before, but hobby doesn't mean low skill.
Exactly.
I mean, it can be a hobby, just means you're not putting out 100 knives a week. You're doing one knife every 3 months, but skill level can be, you know, top notch.
I've often said that the hobbyist, if they have the skill, has more chance of making the better knife. or the better whatever, if they're a woodworker, the better chest of drawers, because they're not constrained by budget and time and paying the bills. They're doing it as a hobby. They can take their time. They can do everything right and produce a better product than, say, somebody who has to fit within a budget and fit within this. And what did the client say? So they're constrained by external constraints, where hobbyists could just go out there and say, I'm going to make the coolest knife ever. And it could take him a year. And he's going to do it. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with that, you know, a good bit. It's, you know, I tell people this all the time. I don't need to sell knives, you know. I do it because I want to, and I make what I want. If you like it, then fine. And if you don't, you know what? That's fine too. I'm not here to impress anybody. I'm not here. Well, I'm actually here to impress a couple of guys. And, you know, it would be Matt and Brett, to be honest with you. I really want to impress those guys because their level of making is, I mean, they're really, to be honest with you, they're master level guys. They just don't have the stamp, in my book. But again, you know, that's whether you believe in the ABS or not the ABS or whatever, or, you know, for bladesmithing. But, you know, those guys are really both great makers. They make really nice stuff, and they have helped me out a lot. And they're not the only people, you know. That's, you know, Silas has helped me out a good bit at the hammer ends. Gabriel Turner, Silas's buddy, you know, he's taught me a few things too. I mean, if you can learn something from anybody, it's a great day. You know what I mean? But if you act like that you know everything, you're probably not going to do too much. It's, you can learn something from everybody. I mean, I've learned stuff from people that I would have never thought in a million years I would have learned something from them, and I have. But I keep that open too. You know, I don't try to act like I'm better than anybody with that type of stuff. I just I like learning, and I like, you know, growing in the field. And it's not just bladesmithing. I like blacksmithing. I've had you know, wood ladle, turn pins, I've turned duck calls and all kind of different stuff. I mean, that's just, I love the art of making anything, but, you know, knives are just something I'm deeply into now, but I'm super invested in it too. You know, I got a press, I got, you know, two grinders, I got, you know, even heat ovens. I mean, I do, I'm kind of pretty deep into it. So I'm just going to have to
take. Need any more grinders? I got.
I do like that.
Every leg grinder,
yeah, nice.
Yeah, I feel like once people start down the knife road, they make it their identity. You know,
it's hard to get out of it.
I'm a knife. You know, it's one thing you don't necessarily see in other art forms. You know,
it's a cool thing to be a part of, because there's so many people that will give you every tip and trick out there, right? And it's kind of cool. A lot of woodworking guys, my dad's a woodworker. My dad's one of the best wood carvers you've ever seen in your life. I mean, guy is
amazing. Birds and stuff, right? Birds and stuff, right?
Yeah. Wouldn't give you a tip at all. Never. But the knife making guys will give you every single tip and tell you how to make it and probably show you their plans, how they made it. That's a cool thing. The problem is there's also guys out there that think they know what they don't know. And then you get a lot of false information. I was probably guilty a little bit of that too. You know, I didn't try to help. But that's why I tell people, if you're new and you're looking, try to go to somebody that's a lot higher skill level than you are, you know, like your Silas or your Matts or your Bretts or whatever, Kyle Royers, all these different guys. Go to those types of guys and get information, because that's going to help you grow. Your average other everyday Joe like myself, I can give you tips on what I know, but, you know, these guys have been doing it for a lot longer, and it's going to help you grow. Taking classes, you know, sent out from Metal Arts, you know, taking classes up there, New England School of Metalworks, taking, you know, classes there. That's where you're going to grow at. It's going to help you. I'm just lucky enough to have a couple of guys that taught me a lot of things that I didn't have to spend a lot of money on.
Yeah, these little events where you get to expose to people are good too, you know?
Yeah.
You find a community around it to be able to know who to learn from and where to go learn. And all.
I mean, even the hammer-ins that you've been, you've been at a bunch of those hammer-ins. I mean, there's so much to learn at just a hammer-in. I mean, last year when Chris Powell was there, you know, it was me and him and you and Ed Johns and Gabriel Turner and Silas and all those, you know, we were all there. I learned so much just from just kind of everybody. Even Chris Cash, you know, Chris is he's a big buck of knowledge. He won't tell you he is, but I mean, he knows a lot of stuff. And just watching him, you know, you can learn so much. And sometimes just shutting up and watching is a big help too, you know? But stepping back and actually looking at yourself and being able to say, hey, you know, I don't know as much as I thought I did, or I want to learn more or whatever. That's a big thing. And that, you know, it was the thing that kind of blew my mind last year was Patty Brooklyn making stuff with Chris Cash. The stuff that she made, I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, she's not a very big person. I'm watching her make stuff with Chris. It was nuts.
Patty's a legend.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, crazy legend. I love Patty. She's great.
Yeah. I think we've talked about it on here before. About her with she's been at the last two group forges. Sorry,
yeah.
And to see her take on the projects there it's pretty wild to see someone take things on like she does. That has, well, now she's got some skill in it. Now she's got some time in it. But on that first event, like, I don't know that she'd ever hit a piece of hot metal.
Yeah, and it was, like I said, it's funny to see, you know, you sometimes some of these events you go to, you just don't expect some of the stuff that you see. And, you know, to know who she is and what she's kind of worked on and where she's came from. I mean, like you said, Patty's a legend. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are that way. But it was very wild to me because last year was one of the first times I'd been to any event like that. And we went to that first Hammer Inn in February, and holy man, was it freezing cold. And I think me and Zach were freezing to death in that place. It was awesome. Huh? It was the first Hammer Inn, I think, in February last year.
I think they had a Hammer Inn before the Group Forge.
Group Forge?
Yeah. Yes.
Is the Group Forge
sure
was...
So that one or no?
I thought you were there. It's hard to remember because I went to so many things last year. But yeah, I think you were there.
I was probably there.
I know Ed Johns was there.
Yeah, he was working on his knife for the Make What You Fear, right?
Yeah, and I helped him with that, which he never mentions, but I helped him with it, and I know Adam Conran helped him too.
Mentions it, because I knew that you helped him.
Oh, he hasn't said it to anybody else, but I mean, whatever, it doesn't matter. I love Eddie, so he's a cool dude. But yeah, me and Adam were working on that, and then I think Big Mike, from Big Bear. I don't know if he showed up for that one or for the second one, but that's where I met him at too. And he's another crazy guy who's trying to get into this blacksmithing world, bladesmithing.
Crazy world.
It's nuts. I mean, there's so many people, and you know, it's crazy. The market's kind of flooded. There's so many people that's doing it or trying to do it or, you know, getting into it or whatever. I think like 5 years ago, I was following, I don't know, like 8,000 knife makers or block makers.
Well, it's just what you said about it being flooded. I'm kind of curious because you went to Blade Show this year, right?
Yeah. Oh, I've been there pretty much almost every year.
So, I mean, most people that go there, there's not many that strike out, is there? Or are there, as far as like empty tables or not? Or is it hit or miss?
I think this year it was actually kind of rough for a lot of people. I kept hearing, of course, and I'm friends with Roy from Vintage Axe Works, Matt, you know, Hensley Blades, a bunch of other people. All those guys told me that they kept hearing, I'll come back. And then of course, you know, they never came back or whatever. And I don't know if people's holding on to their money for whatever reason. And, you know, there's a million ways you can look at that too, whatever. But I just feel like people knew what they wanted. And if they wanted something special, then that's what they were buying. And that was it. Cause it seemed like a lot of people didn't make a lot of sales this year.
Oh, really?
But again, you know, like I said, the markets, it seems like it's really heavily flooded with a lot of different knife makers. And then you got to have to kind of weed through who's a good knife maker, who's not a good knife maker. If it's decent, if it's not decent, I mean, is it okay? Price point, what you're paying for? Is that what you're getting? You know, it's a tough thing to kind of, you know, weed out. And of course, you know, everybody's got their own opinions. I got my opinions where I think a lot of guys are asking a little bit too much for what they're making. But again, that's just my opinion. You know, it's a hard subject to kind of get around because, you know, there's guys out there that's making what I would think would be $2,000 or $3,000 knives, and they're, you know, they're getting $800. And you got guys out there making $20 knives and they're asking $1,000 for it. And the biggest problem with so I was trying to get to this before. The biggest problem with this whole community is, in my opinion, in the knife community, there's a lot of good information out there and there's a lot of good people that will help you. But Jason Knight just said it on his Instagram. There's a lot of you guys been out there making. It's time for you to step up, is what he said. And I think what he was getting at was it's time for you to kind of like grow. And it's okay to say, yeah, man, that's awesome knife. That looks really good. The problem is you can't say, hey, bro, that knife looks like shit. Because if you do, then you're the bad guy. Now, where that comes into play at is, like, if you ask any knife guy, and I've seen Matt do it, I've seen Brett do it, I've seen other people do it, I've seen Swarzer do it. If you ask them for an honest opinion, they're going to tell you it looks like shit.
Yeah.
You got to be able to take that. If you cannot take that criticism and get better, then you're never going to grow. And I don't care if it's knife making, wood turning, whatever. Being an auto painter, right? I mean, anything, you got to take the criticism and you got to take it in stride. I've had people look at my knives and tell me that it looks like hacky crap. But it's also that, you know, I can take that and I don't take it personal. You know, it's them trying to give me their best advice and to grow from that. And I think that's where it fails in this community is it's okay to say, good job, buddy, but it's not okay sometimes to say, dude, that sucks. And I think that's where we need to try to flip this around. And I think it would also help out, you know, people that are prepping for the ABS, people that are, you know, prepping for the Knife Guild or whatever. I think it would help a lot of those guys out.
Well, I mean, it's got to be done with tact, too. You can't just go in there swinging because you're going to look like the asshole. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody just posts a photo of their most recent knife, you can't just say, oh, that looks like hell if they didn't ask for it. You know, if they didn't say, hey, what do you think of my latest knife? Well, then, yeah, I don't really like it, you know?
Yeah, but do you pull them off to the DMs and you tell them that? Or do you tell them that in open? That's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, it's hard to tell people, especially if they ask, because you know they're going to get hurt about it. Most people are going to get upset, going to feel bad about it, no matter what. There's a few people I would think that would take that and say, okay, let me try to improve on that. And it, like I said, it doesn't have to be knife making. It could be anything. But you got to be able to take that and grow from it and not be hurt over what somebody better than you is telling you how to do.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you got to look at where the feedback's coming from.
Oh, of course. Like, I mean, I would, like I said, I wouldn't, if somebody asked me about a knife, I wouldn't be like, well, I have helped, or I feel like I've helped a few guys, and they ask me, and I'm just like, yeah, you know, hey, you're doing okay. You're better than me, or you're worse than me, or whatever. But this is what I would do. But most of those people have been able to take it and move forward. But I know I ask a lot of people to like do resin casting, and I guess that was kind of one of the other things I was trying to get at. Like, you know, there's so much, people give you so much information in the knife world. Dude, nobody would tell me nothing about resin casting with like Total Boat and, you know, Lumalite and all that. Those guys are so closed-lipped. They will give you no tips, no tricks. And if you go on YouTube, you're going to find like one person showing you how to cast resin. It's kind of weird that the amount of people that will help you on certain things, and that amount of people are just like, nope, not giving you nothing. Like, I look forever for resin cast and stuff, and there's nothing on YouTube.
That's weird.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised by that, actually.
You would think the companies that sell it would want to have a how-to page if there's really nothing out there.
I mean, and don't get me wrong, there's people like Dre. I mean, obviously, you know, she does a lot of stuff, videos and things like that, but for knife making or gun handles or, you know, that type of stuff, there's not a lot of that hybrid mix on YouTube. There's one guy that's on there, but he doesn't tell you ratios. He doesn't tell you pour times. I mean, it's so basic that, I mean, you really got to figure out everything on your own.
Is it because a lot of that is, like, I don't know much about resin casting, so just if I'm dumb, just let me know. But is a lot of that based on the environment you're in, the temperature, the humidity? Like, it may not be a good idea for somebody to put that out there on a YouTube and say, this is the ratio you're going to do. It's going to dry in this amount of time. Your recoat's in this time. This is in this time. Because the variables of humidity, temperature, all that stuff change in your shop and how much you're pouring, like the volume that you're pouring, the exothermic reactions. Like, it would be tough if all that stuff really is. I know Dre talks about it religiously, about the temperature of the room and all that stuff, that maybe all that equates to you need to figure it out for your humidity and temperature controlled room. I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate as to why maybe some people aren't doing it. Because, you know, if you were to put that out, because you've been bitching about bad advice the whole time, if you put that out and then somebody says, I did exactly what you said and it didn't work, it's cloudy, it's this, it's that, then you're going to look like the jerk as the guy who put it out there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why they don't do it. I don't know. I know I asked a few people and I got kind of shut down pretty hard from it.
Well, there are people that want to be gatekeepers and hold their craft in. And if they don't want to tell you, then don't talk to that person. You know what I mean? Because there's gatekeepers in all the community, the woodworking community, this community, that community, whatever it is. They're like, I'm not going to tell you. This is my business. You know, if I tell
you, see, that's what I was kind of getting at. Like in the knife business, they'll tell you everything. So it's, well, I don't know. It kind of seems funny because it's like, you know, the knife handle part should be part of it. And you would think that those guys would try to be helpful, but, you know, and everybody stabilizes, everybody does this, everybody does that. You know, they do this part, they do that part, whatever. But it's only the knife making of itself is where you'll get that type of stuff. I mean, I figured out all the resin casting stuff. It's not like super hard to figure it out. So I was kind of lucky to figure that part of it out. But, the few people that I did ask, I mean, there's like saying, no, I don't want to give you my information. And then there's nasty. And there was a couple of guys that were quite nasty about it. Like, they were not very nice about trying to give you tips or tricks on how to get that stuff done.
Well, it's kind of like asking Coca-Cola with the recipe.
True.
You know, I get both sides. Like, I get try to help people further their craft. But if I perfect, just keeping it in the blacksmithing world, if I perfected a dragon twist and everyone's like, oh, how do you do that? But, oh, well, I don't know. That's what I do. You know, I'm not going to tell you. Figure it out. You know, I'm not going to take the money out of my pocket to tell you.
Right.
But if, like, once the dragon twist is known and a bunch of people know how to do it, sure, I'll do a video on how to do it. Here you go. You know, maybe. I don't know. I don't know much about blacksmith.
Tony the blacksmith, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I play one on Instagram.
Do you do a lot of blacksmithing?
I'm a hobbyist.
So you're like me. You're a hobbyist blacksmith. I'm a hobbyist knife maker.
I show up to events and hit stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird how things can be. I don't know. It just kind of blew my mind with somehow some people act about helping or not helping or whatever, and then you got the knife makers that are like, they'll give you the world and tell you everything under the planet. I mean, half of these guys are like selling them, they just give them like plans to make this or make that, or, you know, all these different patterns in Damascus. It's like, you don't even really have to buy this stuff from most of these people. They just tell you how to make it. I mean, there are places that you got to take classes or this, that, or the other. If this guy's super known, you know, you're going to have to pay, you know, $1,000 to take his class. But other than that,
I find for me that when I'm reaching out for information, and if I ask somebody how they do something and they don't tell me or don't want to tell me or give me that standoffish attitude that you should know this or whatever, right?
Right.
Sometimes, and not every time, but sometimes I'll notice that it comes down to a confidence level in them. Like, maybe it worked for them, but they're not confident enough to show you, or confident enough that I'm not going to steal all their business. The guys who are confident and know that they're a master in their craft are willing to help anyone, you know? Because I could show Brandon how to do X, and he's not going to take my customers away from me. There's a lot of people who are overly confident in what they can do, even though it's mediocre. They're overly confident, and they're thinking that if I keep Brandon from knowing this, how to do this, then I can have 100% of the market. Right. When there's other people already doing it. No one's doing any groundbreaking thing here, right?
Well, no, and that's what I've been saying about the knife stuff. Nobody's making any new knives, you know, or new designs. Like, nobody's recreating the knife. But there's so many things out there about epoxy casting, stabilizing, that these guys are still so tight-lipped. They don't want to give any information out, but the knife guys will still give you all the information in the world. And all the blacksmiths will do the same thing. It's just, it's very strange. I think it's like that in the woodworking world. Like I said, my dad's kind of tight-lipped on his carvings and that type of stuff. And I mean, I know some woodworking guys, and I don't want to talk bad about those guys or anything. I'm not saying they're bad people. It's just, they're very, very tight-lipped about their craft.
Well, I do a lot of woodworking. What do you want to know? I'll tell you whatever I know.
Oh, seamless. You're just different about it.
Yeah. It won't be a long conversation.
Oh,
I kind of roll into the, like Keith was saying about the confidence in myself. Like if someone asked me a smithing question, I'd give you something, but most of the time I'm directing you. At the same time, I will then direct you to someone I feel is, you know, well versed in that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I tell people too. Like if somebody asks me something, I'm like, man, don't ask me. Cause I'm like, I'll tell you what I know because of what somebody else has told me. And it's going to be from usually what, you know, like I say, either Matt or Brett or somebody like that has told me, Silas, you know, one of those guys, it's going to be what they told me. And obviously they know way more than I know.
Yeah. And then some of the old timers too, like I run into it in my job in a way, is like, sometimes you gotta earn the information, and not so much as like earn it for each particular person, but to show them that you're
serious.
You're serious about what you're doing, that kind of thing. So that's definitely can play into it.
I could see that for sure. Because I've kind of been down that road, you know. It's like you got to kind of earn your place with the old timers, you know. When I was a kid, I was like, these little crotchety bastards are so mean and they don't want to give me any information, and you're basically just their damn slave, and they're just, go get this and do that, and you go run and do this and run as hard as you can. And you know, it's like now I kind of look back and I'm like, oh, I know why they were doing all that stuff. You know, it's like, one, they were trying to teach you what hard work is all about, and respect. And then, of course, they were obviously trying to run the shit out of you. But, you know, they want to see if you're serious about learning that type of stuff. I think some of that may be lost these days, too. But, I mean, you know, it's another
story. I think there's something to be said about earning your place, you know? If you go to ask somebody, like if I were to go up to somebody and say, all right, I want to make a knife, show me how to do Damascus, right? They're going to laugh at me. You're not a blacksmith. You don't know what you're doing, you know? Why would I teach you how to do Damascus? Why don't you start with the simple stuff, you know? So I'd have to work my way up to that lesson for a number of reasons. There's a million different techniques that if I just say, let me go right into Damascus, and I don't know much about this, so if I'm speaking wrong, tell me. But if I go right into Damascus with not knowing anything else about blacksmithing or bladesmithing or whatever, you would have to teach me every step that you'd have to learn if you were just doing a single steel knife. Master that stuff. Master how to handle. Master how to shape it. And then we'll get into Damascus. So there's kind of a realm of earning your keep.
I kind of don't agree with that, actually, 100%. Anybody can make Damascus.
Okay, so
anybody.
All right, maybe that's a wrong...
I think learning how to make a knife...
Yeah, in the woodworking realm, if somebody said, I've never woodworked before, let's make a Bombay chest, that's not going to happen.
Okay, yeah.
No. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I mean, something like that. So
yeah, that I guess that's kind of what I was saying about the Damascus, though, right? Like, so make it Damascus. I think anybody can do that. I think it's actually very simple to make Damascus. Learning true hammer techniques and actually hand forging out your knife would be your Bombay, right? That'd be where it was at.
Okay.
But again, it's putting in the work, right? I mean, that's like what you're saying. It's you got to learn, you got to put in the work, you got to put in the knowledge, you got to learn the knowledge. I mean, that's where it all, that's why you really need to take classes, or you really need to listen to other people and learn that type of stuff that has way more knowledge than you. And, I think, Jeff Vader says it all the time. I think learning these classes or going to these classes and taking these classes, it's really what people should be doing. And that's anything you want to do. Welding classes. The biggest thing that drives me nuts on Forged in Fire is watch these guys all go on there and not one of those guys can weld. Like basic welding, they can't stick it together. Well, how in the hell are you ever going to make anything if you can't weld? Like, it's just, I don't understand how you can't weld at all. And
would that be something along the lines, just with that case, would that be most of those guys are stock removal guys? Doesn't take away from the skill. They can make a good knife. They just don't use a welding skill to produce what they make. But you're going on Forged in Fire, so you should know how to weld. You should know how to, like, they talk like the canister. Like, you're going on a show, you should have tried to make a canister. You should have tried some welding. You should have tried to sammy, maybe even do copper. Copper work might be a bit much, but like, you should have tried a few of these things, like, or maybe it's just theatrics. And like, yeah, I've never done this before. And then they go out and nail it.
So I'm gonna get just honest about it. That show is no, in my opinion, is no show of power, of skill.
Well,
I think if you're gonna get on any show of that type, right? And I don't care if it's Forged in Fire, the one that the Australians are doing now, whatever. There should be some basic things that you should learn. And welding is going to be number one. And I don't care if you're stock removal or whatever. I think you should, a lot of people, they see the show and they're like, yep, I can do that. Well, go try to do a real true 3-hour show in your shop and, turn off all these things and, maybe go in there and turn off a breaker so you don't have a press anymore, or you don't have this and you're doing it all by hand. I've done these things. I mean, I've done this 3-hour show in my own shop. And it's a tough thing to do, but not knowing some of the basics, and welding would be one of them.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I agree.
You really should learn that before you even get into knife making. You should take a welding class. I mean, they're not expensive. And most people will just tell you or teach you how to weld it. You got a buddy that lives down the street. Old shops, like when we, I don't know if you guys took welding shop when you were kids or auto shop or whatever, but they kind of got rid of all these things. And those are things that really people should know, in my opinion. Like, you really should know welding, basic mechanics, that type of stuff. But I see so many guys go on the show and it's not just that show. I mean, there's other shows too and other things, and they can't weld. I'm just like, how can you not weld?
Well,
I mean, if you're messing with metal, I think you should learn how to weld metal.
I haven't watched many Forged in Fires, right? I'm not a knife maker, but I have watched a few, and some of these knives they come up with are like, how do you even know what that knife was? Like, it's so off the wall, and then you got to make that knife, and you have to do it within a 3-hour window. I mean, you don't know every knife that's out there, every knife shape or style or all that stuff. Were you sitting there reading books on knives and getting the history of this warrior once used it in a battle and 1594, and we're going to make you do it in 3 hours, and you're going to use our tools, which you're not used to, and the layout's different, and you throw on a booger weld, then you're good, Like, I get it. Like, putting, like trying to lay down a proper bead within 3 hours on equipment that's not yours, in a shop that's not yours, is hard,
Oh, of course.
Like, if you were going to do the 3-hour test, like you said, and I'm just being devil's advocate here, but if you were going to do that 3-hour test and I brought you down here to my shop and said, all right, 3 hours, I want you to make this, I don't know, knife or whatever it's called,
Yeah.
Right? What are you going to, Like, are you going to be able to do it and lay down proper beads and act like you're doing it when you only have 3 hours and trying to win 10 grand and the pressure's on and you got cameras in front of you when you're normally not using cameras? Like, there's a lot going on. So, yeah, I know the show's kind of, it is what it is, but I mean, to compete in that realm has gotta be stressful as anything.
Oh, I don't think it's not stressful. I just think, most Lincolns, most Millers, most Titaniums, Hercules, all these different welders. I mean, they're all kind of the same welder. And if you're using, most of them are MIGs. I mean, they're not running arc welders at most of these things. Definitely not running TIG, which most people couldn't take their life depended on it. But I mean, MIG welding is the basic, most easiest thing you can do. They're all basically the same.
MIG welder was the first 3D printer.
Yeah, exactly. It really was. I mean, it's not hard to lay a bead with a MIG, and if it is, then again, you should go take a class before you ever go jump on the show or whatever. Can you get lucky? Of course you can get lucky. Anybody can get lucky. It's like playing the lottery, you know? You can go out there and throw $20 and you might be the next billionaire.
I'm devil's advocate as well here a little bit, but some of it is theatrics too, because they'll show them, they'll pull a trigger and then they'll get the little pop because it was too, like the lead was too short out of the gun, but that's all they'll show of their weld. And then like they play it up. So, but they're definitely, you can see when they do show a few weld beads, you're like, you need some work.
Well, my favorite is when they're holding the gun, 2 feet away and you see the
wire come out. Yeah.
That's so bad. But I mean, and again, whatever. Like I said, that show is just, it's all it is, this game show. It's not, I've seen some of the best bladesmiths, go off of that show early, and I've seen some bad ones win. So, I mean, it is what it is. It's just, it's a game show.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the first few years, like I honestly haven't watched it in probably about 3 or 4 years now, but before, like the early shows when they were really trying to find people and they hadn't essentially grown their own group of smiths to choose from, because I mean after the show started they had more people to pick from, like when they had, there was an older group of gentlemen, the four, and they basically had complete knives, basically complete knives. They just needed a handle after the first hour. Like, it showed you, that show still was able to demonstrate that there is a skill level out there that is way beyond what their average contestant might be. Because when they showed that, they didn't make tiny knives. They made, the full game show size, like 10, 12, 15 inch knife. And they were basically done in the first hour or first 3 hours or whatever it was.
Right.
Like, they had the first session. They're basically coming down to like the finer points. And it wasn't like three guys had, a quench knife and one guy had a turd that he had just basically forged out because he messed up the first billet. Like, you do see a lot of different skill levels.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's what keeps it interesting on that for sure, is, all the different skill levels. And that's probably why you get such a spacing on that show, with like the welding, hammer techniques on the anvil, or being able to use a power hammer, press, forge, some of those guys are probably still using coal or coffee can forges. It's what a lot of people start out with. If you're getting in a knife thing, you try to get into it super cheap, and then you figure out real quick that, cheap doesn't get you nice knives.
You're gonna be spending. Yeah. No, you're right. You go from, say, a coffee can forge, it's still propane, and some people would think, you're going to this propane, like that three burner that they have.
Right.
Well, that three burner's hot enough. It'll burn a high carbon steel.
Right.
And people probably aren't used to that from their home forges.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Well, the other thing with those shows is the masters in their craft aren't going to go on it. There's no benefit to a master being on there. And I'm not saying Jeff Fader's a master.
There have been ABS master smiths on that. Yes.
Yeah.
Competing.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
One and lost.
Walter Sorrells was like out second round. I don't know if he is. No. I mean, he's a big YouTube guy. I don't know if he's part of the ABS, but I mean, first, second round out. I mean, big, that means big name. Trolsky, he did the international. Trolsky out, I think, first or second round again. I mean, there's so many people that have went out first or second round, you know, Master Smiths or big YouTube names, that are actually really good people that, I mean, they forge really well and stuff like that. But you know, they're like Ilya. I mean, he killed it. You know, he did a really good job. I mean, it's Ilya. I mean, he's always going to kill it. Guy's crazy on a power hammer.
I don't know he was on it either.
Yeah, he was in one of the first seasons. He does stress doesn't get him. And that, and he showed that in that. Like, they tried to stress him, and he was just like, basically fuck you, I'm going to make a knife. I'm going to get this done.
And then he made a shield, and it was just, I mean, it was, oh my God, I think it was so badass. And I mean, if you've ever seen Ilya's work, I mean, you know, he just, I don't think he can make a basic anything. He's so, even his basic is just so out there. You know what I mean? It's so awesome looking. So he definitely killed it. But it's, you know, again, I say that about that show all the time. It's not a show of skill. It's a game show. Just something cool that came out. The only thing I would
still
say
doing that about, are they still making this show?
Yeah, I guess they are. The only thing I'll say bad about that show is it really upped the prices of anvils really bad. It made them hard to find. And then it flooded the market.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, it's good that it got so many people involved and making. And I will say that's the other side of that whole thing of that show is there's so many kids that were video games, didn't do crap, you know, lazy, sit around their house and didn't do anything at all. And I feel like a lot of kids have got out and started making more things because of, you know, that show, the show that Jimmy was on, like, Making It, the other one that he did with Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler. Like, it seemed like a lot of these making type shows have really got kids and people out and into making things. Cause you, I mean, look at the first Maker Camp, you know, you had a few people, right? And last year, things was packed. This year, I think this year is going to be insane. I think it's going to be, I know, dude, it's just going to be awesome.
I also like that glass blowing show. Have you watched that?
The Blown Away.
Yeah.
Metal Shop Masters was good.
Yep.
They're all,
I mean, Jesse James, he's one of the original makers, right? I mean, Jesse James is just, and now he's making knives. He's making 1911s. I mean, he's making all this crazy stuff. And I mean, he's great with metal. There's just so many people out there to influence all these people, and it's great that it's out there. And I mean, I like being a part of it, but I want to give credit where credit's due and people that has helped me along the way. And like I said, you know, it's, I think people might not do that as much as they should, is giving credit. But also giving credit to these people that have these events, you know, like Austin with the hammer ends and the timber ends. And I mean, Austin has got such a great thing going on down at the Maker Camp. It's just, and it's not, I mean, it's not just Maker Camp, right? It's the hammer and timber and all these things.
These classes in the winter, yeah.
Yeah. And Austin, I mean, God, he's such a good person. I love that kid. And he's so cool. But it's all the people that come to it, and you get to learn from those people, you know, and you get to talk. And not only that, you get to talk and hang out and have a good time, you know. Like, if people get to talk to Patty Brooklyn and know what she's working on, and I don't, you know, I don't know if I should say what she's working on, but what she is working on is totally awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, you guys know what she's working on. It's insane. I love it.
Legend. I keep telling you.
Yeah, she's so awesome. But if you don't know her and you don't know what she's working on, I mean, you know what I mean. You got to get out to these things. You got to take these classes. You got to get out and meet these people. It's just so awesome to do these things. I feel like every time I go to Maker Camp for anything, a hammer in or timber in or whatever, I meet, like, you know, three new people every time I go. And then it's like you always talk to them on Instagram or you talk to them at these events, but it's like, you know, you're best friends with them. And it's just, it's so nice that you can talk to these people. I mean, me and Tony cut up all the time, and I've only met Tony once. He's always busting my balls about looking old and, you know, being an old man.
My problem is I meet so many people at these things, I forget what they look like or who they are. And I know I met you, I don't know who you are, and I feel like a jerk, you know?
I'm that guy most of the time. Keith will be like, oh, yeah, you remember so-and-so? Yeah, they were standing right beside us there for like an hour. I'm like, I have no idea. I remember, I might remember talking to them, but I don't remember. I have a hard time with names. If I've met you and I've seen your, like, if I've seen your face, I will not forget your face, but God help me if I can remember your name.
He was the guy with the beard. Whereas,
yeah, the bald guy with the beard. Yeah, that was really, yeah.
Was it the bald guy with the sweatshirt or the bald guy in the flannel? Well, yeah. He wore both. Friday, he had the sweatshirt. Saturday, he had the flannel.
In the flannel over the sweatshirt with the hood out the back.
Yeah. My favorite was the Mark Adams pitcher. And I think I went on, probably, I think it was on Sunday, tried to get the other guys to take a picture. I mean, they didn't want to do it. And I guess after I took the picture, I kept looking at him like, Jesus, I couldn't have wore the worst shirt ever in this Mark Adams pitcher. And it's this little, it's a Ranger Up shirt. So it's a military company that sells these shirts. And it's this beaver. With this big, googly, like, I guess it's like a Beanie Boo eyes, you call them, like huge eyes. And it says underneath the bottom, sometimes I think of murder, and he's holding a lollipop. Just like, yeah, perfect.
Yeah. And now it's ingrained in.
Yeah.
You got to be careful what you wear.
Yeah, for sure. I tell her, like, next year it's just going to be Red Label and, you know, Sabretooth or something like that. Can't be wearing those types of shirts.
I try to
wear the work hand shirt.
I always try to bring power-looking stuff.
Or I'll wear my own shirt.
Yeah, like this one I got on right now. It's like all I wear is old powerlifting stuff.
So I listened today to the podcast. When's your comp?
Well, it'll be passed by the time we do this one. So,
okay.
So today, well, I lift on Sunday the 24th, I think it is.
Oh, so coming up this week.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I get it. Well, I know it's Sunday. I just don't know the actual day.
And you say you're going past your record? You're going to try to pass your record?
I don't think so. I think I'm going to try and just have a good, solid meet and go from there.
It'll have been 2 weeks prior to this episode coming out. So we will know. Talk.
Yeah.
How'd you do, Tony? Did you meet your goal?
Yeah, when this comes out, I'll be on a boat.
Well, congratulations. Back to not congratulations, maybe. I don't know how that sounds.
Good luck next time.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Good job, Tony. Let's get them all. Let's get them all in now.
Yeah.
So how did you get mixed up with this being in Canada? I've never heard the story.
With the Maker Camp thing, it was a Jimmy thing because I got onto the Jimmy videos years ago now, but I'd always wanted to blacksmith. And the funny thing is, okay, so the first time I actually watched a Jimmy video was the time him and Brett McAfee built the three burner forge that they have.
Yeah.
So I was looking at building a forge, and I was trying to find someone that had built it in a similar fashion to the way I was. So I was watching every forge build video I could find. And that's how I found those two guys, was Brett and Jimmy. And then I started following both of them on Instagram. And then that was probably 2016-ish, maybe 2017. I might have those dates wrong, but I remember it was pre, like, 2018. And then I started collecting stuff up, and they, what was it? He posted the video with Austin about camp. And then it was one of the few times I like jumped at something. I generally sit back and let stuff come at me. And that was, I remember I looked at it. I'm like, it's 10 hours away. I talked to Lil. We got talking about it. I said, it's not going to be cheap because the two of us will, like, it's 500 a piece, basically, essentially. And then it just snowballed from there. And I haven't missed one since. So it was just, yeah, it was just, I guess that's how I got into it, was just, basically it was Keith and Chad was kind of the guys I took away from, and David Beckwith is one too that I remember that I met that weekend. And yeah, just from there, just friendships started, and then, yeah, to have a look back, it's been a lot of fun.
That place is going to be so big in the next 5 years that
Well, you look at where you.
I hope they're going to be able to hold it all.
Yeah. Were you at 19?
No.
The first one? Yeah.
No.
So to see the difference from 19, we all missed.
I've seen all the pictures.
Yeah. We all missed 20 and then 21 and 22. Like to see what's happened in the basically 4 years, it's quite a thing.
Oh, it's huge. It's crazy. And I tell everybody I know, like, and even my other customers, right? I'm like, hey, you should go to the maker camp. You should go hang out. You know, you should do this. And they're like, oh, how much is it? Where's it at? And I try to tell them, and trying to explain maker camp to people is like, oh, somebody needs to do is come up with a way to explain maker camp where people are would one understand it, get it, and maybe really want to go to it, because you try to tell people what it is, and it's like, huh? It's hard to tell like non-maker people what maker
It's hard to tell non-makers what a maker is.
Yeah.
Like, and then even, like, when I say, like, I blacksmith as a hobby, they're like, oh, you make knives? That's what I get every time. Or, oh, do you shoot horses? That's the things you get. I get that one way less. I get the knives one more often than not.
My favorite one at a show is, have you seen that show?
I think that usually comes after the do you make knives.
Mm-hmm. I think the last show I did, it had to be 40 people. Have you seen that show on TV on History Channel? I'm like, Forge and Fire. And they're like, yeah. I said if I had a dollar for every time somebody asked me that question, I wouldn't have to sell knives anymore.
Yeah.
What is this maker camp?
It's a magical place.
Put on by Austin.
Yeah, it's a...
Whoever else puts it on, I think it's more than... I said something to Chris. I was like, how many people are actually involved in Maker Camp? Like, it seems like a big ordeal. I went down last year to help, and, man, I felt like I got in the way more than anything else, but it's so huge. Awesome. And it seems like this year is going to be even bigger. Like, everything I've seen... It seems like Austin's actually added more people this year, and it's every time I see an Instagram update on the Maker Camp, it's like something new that I've never heard of.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good.
Yeah, now he's got a party on Thursday night.
Yeah, there was an unofficial
party there at Thursday night, though, right? I mean,
well, now it's official.
Now it's official, though.
Yeah. The few of us that used to go Thursday knew about the Thursday night party.
Right.
I was talking to somebody.
So that party will get moved to Wednesday?
That's exactly what I was about to say. I was talking to somebody the other day. And I said, yeah, now we're going to have to show up on Wednesday.
This is not the after show.
Oh, sorry.
But speaking of Maker Camp, if you are coming and you want to participate in the Maker Swap, use the hashtag Maker Camp Maker Swap. Show off what you're making. Get a buzz going. Show off your skills. Make something from your skill. What we want to see this year. You bring an item and you go home with an item. It's pretty cool. You making something, Brandon?
Yeah, me last year. I will say this for anybody that's going that has not ever been or even has been and has never made anything, make something, because who will get your product? I thought for me last year was one of the coolest things, and what I got was even more cool. Jeff Bader got my... It was a couple little can openers. I did a Punisher skull out of a piece of plywood, painted American flag on it, and I turned a pin. So his wife got a pin. He got a keychain, two keychain, Damascus keychains, pry bars, was kind of like, bottle openers. And then he put the thing in the shop. But that's what he got from me. I won from Josh Fisk the little 3D printed 100-pound giant.
Oh, that thing's cool.
Oh, that is cool, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you've never made it is and got into the Maker Swap, definitely do it. It's awesome to give and receive on both ends of that, because everything there is... I didn't see anything there that I did not want last year. I would have took anything in that whole entire thing.
It is cool. Show off your skills.
Yeah.
That you're putting in. It's your chance to showcase what you can do. Kind of like what Brandon's been saying the whole time, step it up. Who was the guy who said that? Time to step up.
Jason Knight.
So for your swap item this year, it's time to step up. Show off your skill. Whatever that skill is, show it off. You know, don't be, it's a cool event. And then you could say, like, throughout the weekend, hey, I made that. Go check it out. You know, it's nice to have something that you did there.
And that was the other thing that was cool. You could go look at all what somebody said that. You could actually go look at it and, you know, say, wow, that's awesome. And then drool on it and wish that you won it. And then you want something cool anyway.
Yeah.
I was so blown away by, and, you know, again, that's just another way to meet somebody else. I didn't know who Josh Fisk was. I had no clue who the guy was. And then when I won that, I was like, oh, man, that's so awesome.
It's pure chaos for me and Tony, like checking everyone in and
oh, sure.
Trying to organize it and tell everyone the rules and everything of how it works. And at one point, we were like loading up the trailer and Tony's like, did you see that knife? And I'm like, no. He's like, did you see that thing? I'm like, no. Did you see that? I'm like, no. And he starts pointing it out, and everything was better than the last thing. And it was like, it's pretty wild.
That's crazy.
It was a
I mean,
stuff.
The level there is pretty, I mean, it's pretty high as it is. I mean, I'm sure some people, you know, maybe some woodworker just threw in a bowl that, you know, he turns in 10 minutes and it's not his top of the line bowl or whatever. I mean, whatever it may be. But even that, like, if you're not a wood guy, you'd never know that it was just a basic bowl. Like I said, anything there that was there last year, I would have loved to have pretty much anything there.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody who, their whole thing is they make cutting board, right?
Mm.
And they're like, I only make cutting boards. Like, I'm not going to, I'm like, but are you good at making cutting boards? Is that your skill? Then put it in. They're like, yeah, but everyone makes cutting boards. I said, everyone who's a woodworker makes cutting boards, you know? If a knife maker gets it, he may not have a table saw, a plane, or a joint. Like, he may not be able to make one. So it's pretty cool that he can go home with one.
No, oh, for sure.
So, yeah, I mean, for that case, there was a cutting board. There was multiple cutting boards that were really, like, the wow of the table. Like, they were...
Yeah. There was a cutting board that people were horse trading to try and get. You know, I'll trade this to that guy if you trade me this and that. And it's, you know... If you can.
And the coolest thing about that whole thing is after, well, and I don't know if that was everybody, but I seen a lot of people doing it, and Jeff definitely walked up to me, actually looked for me, and Lucas was like, hey, Brandon, Jeff's looking for you. And he walked up to me and was like, hey, this is super cool. It's awesome that you made this. He goes, not, and you're very generous. He's like, you know, it was awesome that you didn't just one thing. He goes, you give up a few things. I was like, well, it was kind of like a kit, you know, I want to just, you know, somebody just get something different and kind of show off all of what I can do. And he was like, yeah, it's cool that my wife can have a pin and my daughter can have this keychain and I'm hanging this up in my shop.
Cool.
But, and I didn't care who got what. It was just awesome that he walked up to me, and because he did that, then I walked over to Josh and said, hey, you know, we're really cool. And then people started walking over to Brett, and oh, that's just like, this is so awesome that people and the community came together just to say, thank you for putting something in and showing your skill. Again, it's just make your accounts, man. It's like a magical place.
Yeah. Well, that's one part of the swap is to kind of almost like a mixer. And we don't let anybody walk away unless their item is tagged by them somehow, whether it's just, you know, writing on a piece. Well, basically for most people, it's just writing on a piece of paper, Instagram handle or something along those lines. We've had some people who don't have Instagram and just put an email.
Yep, we have a lot of that.
So you'll have that too.
Surprising out of that. Like, how did they even know the swap was a thing?
Yeah, well, and then generally too, you'll have most people are watching. So say you, like at the end, like last year was kind of a madhouse, but we're hoping to clear that up. But you'll watch people watching their item just to see who it goes to. And then some people will come right up and talk to them right away, or they'll find a way to you know,
converse later,
make that conversation happen later. Like it's a big thing. Like everybody tries to do that. So it's really a neat part of it.
Well, and I mean, I'm not going to sit here and bull crab you. I mean, I had my stuff in the car and I was like, and I really wanted to look and I was like, man, is my stuff even like, because I mean, I knew the names there. I mean, you know, I'm not crazy. I knew who was there. And I just kind of looked around and I was like, well, my stuff's not that bad. You know, it's like, all right, I'll throw it in. And then, you know, I did. Now, I was glad that I did because, you know, you sometimes you look at your stuff and you're like, is that good enough? You know, or am I as good as this guy or that guy? But like you were saying, you know, that's my level at the time. And I mean, the keychains are cool. The bottle opener pry bars, you know, they're Damascus. I thought they were cool. So, the pin was really nice. That was one of like the nicest pins I ever turned.
I think that's what I remember the most, to be honest. Out of the, because you, I think you handed the items to me.
Yeah.
In the, and then that's what I remember is your pin. I don't really, be honest, like for the amount of items that I saw on that weekend, that's what I remember is your pin.
And I don't even do that anymore.
I remember that. Honor.
Well, I don't
remember the Damascus keychains. That's news to me. Well, even Damascus keychains.
I remember. Yeah, I remember the skull after you just said it now, but I don't remember it until you, like, I had that cue.
Yeah, there's so many things people are like, oh, yeah, this, I got this at the swap, or I found it. I'm like, I see and handle every item with Tony, but like, maybe I didn't touch that, but there's so many. I don't know what everything is, you know?
Yeah, and it's a lot for you guys to keep up with, too, I'm sure.
It's pure chaos. We're helping to curb a little of the chaos this year.
I'll be honest with you. I mean, you guys do a pretty good job. I mean, I know you say it's chaos, but if that was me doing that, it would be a lot worse than chaos. It would be madness, and I would probably be giving up halfway through. You guys do a pretty good job with it. That's for sure.
Well, the first year,
very organized looking.
The first year we did it, Tony and I left the compound for a little bit, and that was a nice little getaway. This last year, when we were done, I just went back and took a nap. Like, it was like exhausting.
He's getting old.
I am old.
He says that a lot. Yeah. I'm getting over Tony saying people are old. He says that to me all the time.
You look really old. That's just because he's young.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's thank our patrons.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. So I'll go through the list here. With Corey of Odyssey CNC, Christy of Twisted Twine, Annette of 513 Woodworks, Full Steam Designs by Chris Powell, Lillian Archer Photography, David Beckwith Makes, NB Wood Finery. Our top tier, we have Espoke Studios, Danelle Smith Christian, Ryan Drennan, Lawrence Maritime Knife Supply.com, Ed Johns of ButtJoints.com, Adam of Uncle Sam Metalworks, Vincent Ferrari of Digitally Creative, Brian Housewort of Workfort Podcast, Artigino Sorio, Matt of Wooden Mustache, Brad of Brad's Customs, David and Joanna at Wido Works, Chad of Chad's Custom Creations, Ryan of Gnome Hammer Forge, David of DW Wood Builds, Matt of First Do Construction, and Tony of Kodamo Design. Thank you all.
Yes, thank you all. Little housekeeping while we're here, since we're recording this one so early, I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's still doing it, but the Gnome Hammer waffle raffle with Who's My What's It's should be going on for the month of August. You can head on over to Gnome Hammer Forge for all the details. There's tickets, there's different patron things you can do over there. He's got all the deets on it. If you want in, he's making something awesome, I'm sure. Last month, he gave away one of his new signature hammers with a cool handle. So yeah, check that out.
That was a cool hammer.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he made a hammer and a mushroom last year for the swap. Yeah, it was pretty. The handle on that thing was so nice. Like, it's one of those things, it's a wall hanger. Well, I don't really have wall hangers, but it'd be pretty close to it for me. Like,
wasn't it a Damascus head hammer too?
I think so. Yes.
I think it was a wrought iron, wasn't it?
No.
Was it Damascus?
There was a wrought iron hammer.
It looked layered anyways.
Yeah. Whatever it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, there's been some cool
stuff. I had a wrought hammer head. It looked really crazy layered because it had a bunch of stuff in it, but it's no longer with me. Talk about that another time.
Well, you got any final parting words before we head on over to the after show?
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's awesome. It's a good time for sure. Just definitely tell anybody that's thinking about going to Maker Camp, go. It's 100% worth it. Even if you got a camp tent, you know, whatever camper, go to Maker Camp. It's awesome. You get to meet all your buddies and all your Instagram friends and
make new ones.
Yeah, and exactly. And then watch a bunch of crazy people get drunk on Friday, Saturday night and do karaoke.
Walk away from that.
Oh, come on. It was awesome.
Well, I didn't stick around. We'll talk about that in a little
bit. All right.
If you want to find Brandon, you can find him at BCK Knives on Instagram. He is Echo, EKO _ Mountain Crafts. That's Echo Mountain Crafts. Are you on TikTok?
I am. I don't post. I'm on a lot, all of them. But just Instagram.
Instagram is where to find him. He's got some amazing knives on there and some other stuff. He's a cool follow. Give him a follow. If you want to find Tony, he's at Woodland Iron. I'm at Blackthorn Concepts. Both of us can be found at Working Hands Podcast on Instagram. It gets confusing in the DMs for us, as we've had a few times answering different questions. We're on TikTok at Working Hands 3, or you can email us if you have an inquiry at workinghandspodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a review and a rating of 5 stars. We'd appreciate it. And we will see you guys later.
Later.
Have a good one.